What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bad Happy Podcast. I'm Payman.
I'm Mason.
And I'm Phineas.
And we have a shorter episode today. We're actually getting ready to open up our first flagship store. I know we talked about that a few weeks ago here on the podcast. It's definitely been a busy time for us as, you know, we opened New York. We actually just launched as well in Dover Street Market in Japan. So big moment for us there. You know, it's been a long time coming, almost 7 years. So big moment for us. Right, Maze?
Yeah, super big. Definitely very exciting. Probably the biggest moment in the history of the company, honestly. I think it's really cool. Obviously, we've done 20 some odd pop-ups over the last 7 years. But I think this undertaking of opening up a flagship and the way we've wanted to do it and the kind of space that we've wanted to create has obviously been a massive undertaking for us. I think it's been a huge learning, so many things on just like the business side that I feel like we have didn't know about 6, 7, 8 months ago, obviously on like the construction side, right? All this like operational stuff that's over here. And then there's also just all the more exciting brand and opportunity stuff that's over here. And yeah, we're just like super pumped. It's been a lot of work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for so many people and so much of the team, and it really does feel like this sort of culmination moment. Funny enough, this flagship store on Melrose is actually just like, what was it, like 0.3, 0.4 miles away from where our first ever pop-up was on Robertson. So yeah, it's a really big deal, and it's in the midst of all this other craziness, like Payman was saying, all these other moments, you know, sort of everything compounding on top of each other at the end of the year. Definitely wasn't how we originally planned it out, but it's how it's happening now, and we couldn't be more excited for it. So yeah, I think we wanted to share a little bit more about kind of what makes this store special, what we're so excited about specifically. Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, almost 7 years in the making, and we got the space almost a year ago, so we definitely learned the hard way what it takes to open up a store permanently. I think we've been used to opening up the seasonal shops, but this was definitely a bigger undertaking, and of course, we learned a lot from it, and it's the first one. But for us, it was important to open in LA, to have a space that, you know, we could really host a lot at, and so Mason, you can jump into some of the different aspects and features of the store.
Yeah, I think for anyone who's ever been to any of our stores, I feel like we've always really tried to create these community spaces, spaces for people to come and gather and hang out and converse and think and learn and reflect, and not necessarily just to come and buy clothes. You know, we've never had giant like mannequin displays, or we've never had, you know, piles of clothes folded with sizes to rifle through, or really anything like that. I think even back from our very first pop-up that I mentioned earlier, there was always some sort of level of experience and interaction and some sort of activation that you could participate in that was free, that was beyond a purchase or beyond any sort of transaction. And I think we've continued to that, right? We used to have these sort of blank makes me mad happy walls that you could write all over that we did for a few years. And then we had this concept called the self-reflection chamber that was an exhibit that we brought in LA and to New York with these like mirrored rooms that you could go in with these messages that were super interactive and fun. And then just different versions like that throughout the years, I feel like really made our spaces special and were things that people really responded to in such a positive way. So I think now for our flagship, right, it was really around thinking about how can we take that to the next level and how can we really create a space where people want to come and spend time. And you know, where we sort of landed with all of that is we have sort of three key elements that I feel like really make this space special. The first being what we're calling the LO space, the local optimist space, which is sort of one of those experiential rooms with mirrors, with LED video display, and that'll basically be sort of like a rotating exhibition where we work with different artists with different audio and visual installations that are really meant to sort of stimulate your senses in a way, create this sort of quiet space for introspection and reflection. You know, I feel like obviously there's so much craziness in the world and our lives are so hectic on a day-to-day basis that this is really just like a sealed off room where you can just sort of zone out and get lost in some really beautiful audio and some amazing video. So we're super excited about that. We have basically, you know, maybe 35-40% of the store is this conversation pit, which, you know, those were obviously super popular back in like the 60s and 70s in terms of like architecture and homes, of like really just like a place for people to come and gather. Way more intentional, I feel like, than just a regular like dining room table or like a couch or something, right? It's like you're sort of making more of a commitment to really converse and hang out. And that's right in front of this really cool library wall that we have that'll have, you know, not just our own magazines and journals and things like that, but also other books and other knickknacks for you to sort of peruse through and hang out within the pit. And then this all leads to this concept that we're calling Pantry in the back of the store, which is a new brand that we're launching underneath Mad Happy. That's a cafe. That's a food and beverage cafe. So the concept for Pantry is basically if you were to open up the Mad Happy cupboard and peek inside our pantry, this is sort of what you would see and who you would find. So we've obviously done so many amazing collaborations with different food and beverage partners all over the world, but mainly all over LA, and we thought it would be so amazing to sort of feature our friends in our pantry. So we're going to have a range of goods from Courage bagels to pastries with Justa to some juices with Beverly Hills Juice. The flavors of Awan ice cream that we made with them are there. We have some really fun stuff with John and Vinny's that's going to be in there. And we have a coffee partner with this woman, Natalie, who has a company called Hotel Drugs in Tokyo that we've become really close with. So she has a really, really amazing brand out there that we're bringing over here to launch in Pantry. So yeah, we're super excited about that. There's a little courtyard area with a gorgeous tree in the middle and a lot of space for people to sit and hang out and enjoy that. And we're definitely looking forward to doing more seasonal menu items and working with different people and partners to continue to sort of build out Pantry. So we're super excited about all that. Those are sort of the three elements outside of all the amazing apparel and more traditional retail displays and fixtures and accessories that we'll have in store as well. But yeah, those are a few of the things that are really, really exciting about this space.
Phineas, what do you think?
I was going to ask a question. Retail seems to have always been like a core element of Mad Happy. When you first started it, it's obviously evolved like what you just described, Mason, is quite an elaborate manifestation of like at a different level for Mad Happy. When you first started the brand, was retail and thinking about it like a third space of gathering and community, like was that always part of the vision, like having physical space culminating in something at this scale? I mean, what you're opening is like quite significant. Like, can you zoom out and back a bit and like was it always core to the mission and the brand and the identity having a physical space?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we knew necessarily at the beginning, so I don't know if it's we specifically did it, but we were very lucky to have a few early opportunities to do pop-ups. We did about 3 our first year, 4 our second year, which is a lot if you think about it for a small, tiny brand. And I think from that we saw the power of it. We were never really following the notion that like e-com is the only thing. And I think, you know, having grown up in LA, doing a pop-up in LA the month that we sort of launch a brand and bring people in the space, you know, even that space was pretty cool and open and inviting, and I think also allowed for us to do some events there, which I think showed us the power of not only bringing people together physically, but then what maybe that could do for you digitally in terms of people sharing that and getting behind something new. I think in apparel it's very important for people to build a connection with the brand in person, even though of course like online could be a majority of many people's businesses. I think that element early on definitely gave us an advantage and also made the brand seem a lot bigger in the early days. And yeah, I think from that it became core to our DNA and who we were as a brand, and we've continued to try to, I guess, innovate on that and do better and more interesting concepts as we've grown.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. A lot of the things that I feel like have been most successful for us now, you know, sort of like this mental health element of the brand and this retail element of the brand, like you said, payment weren't necessarily, you know, things that we like wrote down on paper that we wanted to do as part of the vision. They were sort of just things that we had privileged opportunities to be able to do and like go into these spaces and ended up working. So we ended up just sort of following the path that was naturally just sort of being laid out in front of us. And I feel like that's been really fruitful and successful for us in a way where I get what you're saying, Phineas, of looking back, like, wow, they laid down this roadmap in a way. But we sort of just took the opportunities that we had, and this is where it led us in that way.
It's cool to see the community come out for these stores too. I mean, it's like, I imagine you wouldn't be pursuing this and embracing it as much if your community did not embrace it to the level that they have. I mean, every store launch seems like a celebration of the brand in a way that I think is quite rare. So it's cool to see how community is so interwoven into the retail strategy, into the retail experiences and each time. And one element I think is worth calling out that is unique to Mad Happy is just the great lengths to which you go to reflect the local community and culture of the place. Can you speak to that as a strategy? Can you speak to that a little bit as like a core element of what you believe? Like, Mason, you rattled off a bunch of the partnerships that you all have done in retail up to that point, but why is that so important? Like when you came to New York recently, you know, you did Cat's Deli and others. Can you speak to that part of it? Which I think everybody that loves the brand loves that element of the retail experience. Can you speak to that side of it?
Yeah, I think again, it's just when we launched the brand, we were sort of at that sweet spot in our lives of, you know, people in college, just out of high school, just graduating college. And that time period of life is so community-based, is so energetic, is so outside. We're going to this party, we're going to this club, this is a new restaurant, this is all that. So that was sort of like the energy that the brand started with. And then I think we thought about doing our collaborations in a more strategic way. So it was like, hey, why not just limit ourselves to thinking about apparel companies, right? Why not think outside the box of, there are just businesses that people love that are, whether they're, you know, 75 plus year old institutions like Apple Pan or a brand new restaurant at the time like John and Vinny's, like there's something cool happening with culture outside of just traditional like movies, fashion and sports, you know, but it was growing into food, it was growing into TV shows, it was going into individual talent and the creator economy as people also. So I think it was just like really great timing for us to sort of leverage some of those other opportunities. And then I think once the first couple really started to hit and we saw that response, it sort of opened up this whole new market and sort of became a no-brainer of like, wow, like we knew Apple Pan because we grew up in LA, but it's like everywhere we go, there's a version of that in every town, whether it's Paradise Bakery in Aspen that no one would ever know unless you've spent time in Aspen, right? Or Katz's is obviously a 100-plus-year-old institution there, right? But there are all these sort of different iconic places in every area that means so much to the people there that us creating the opportunity to sort of support those brands and those businesses is almost like us giving back to those local communities in a way. And I think to your point, it's like we've seen the magic of how special it is to not only work with those people, but then to sort of offer that product and offer that experience to people on the ground at a local level. It's so exciting. It's so exciting. And you can do so many really cool things with it. You know, like we had the live pastrami carving station in our New York store to celebrate other Katz's thing, right? It's like, that's awesome. And that's something totally fresh and new and that I don't know anyone who ever did before. So yeah, it's been really awesome to sort of do those. And I think Pantry really is like the culmination of that, to have something that is more sort of evergreen that people can come and oh, this juice is amazing. Oh, they have this location over here and they're opening up this location here, right? It's like, and we can help those brands grow also. And then it sort of just interlinks the communities all over the country and all over the world as we continue to open up these stores and pantries and work with different partners. And, you know, hopefully it can just continue to be a spider web that grows and grows.
Yeah, I think it also does something subtle that it pays homage a little bit to the local, more historic cultural fabric of that place. And I think probably over time that endears you to the community that's there in a just a more authentic way, a more rich way. And I think that probably, you know, in the beginning, it's like a cool novelty moment that definitely is cool for the brand. But then over the longer period, I think it's like allows you to just be more part of that fabric, you know, it's almost like permission, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good point of almost like we've wanted to respect and honor the places that we're going into by sort of working with those fan favorite, you know, local institutions that truly do mean so much to the people.
Well, congrats, gentlemen. It's exciting.
Thank you, man.
Thanks so much. But yeah, it's definitely something that we think people need to see in person to really understand. But hopefully this was a good audio description. And you could check out our Instagram for more info. Before we close, should we touch on, Mason, your big accomplishment recently? We have to close the loop. What
sure, sure, yeah. So I finished my sort of, you know, fitness training program, whatever you want to call it. I got down to 15% body fat from being at 34% in March. So about 8 months, you know, was a crazy journey. I know I've spoken about it on the show before, but really had to completely transform my lifestyle and my habits, you know, everything from what time I woke up and went to bed to what I was eating every day to, you know, all of those sorts of things, how many steps I was getting a day. You know, there were obviously a lot of sacrifices that I had to make socially, eating out, dinners, different events, things like that. But I think all in all, feel really proud of myself. And you know, I put that post up maybe like a couple weeks ago now, which definitely is slightly out of my character to post a photo of myself with my shirt off.
Everybody's
but,
got to look at it. I mean, everybody's got to look at it. It's amazing.
But it felt good. It was like really like an amazing culmination of a lot of hard work. And again, I'm just super, super grateful for like Ilya and like the Zila team for sort of giving me that opportunity and like willing to invest all that time and energy and like helping me transform my body. And yeah, I think now I'm in a place where it's become so baked into who I am and what I like to do and what makes me feel good. You know, I think it's now really a huge part of my mental health story and my mental health journey and like my ongoing mental health maintenance, I think, is the biggest thing. So, you know, a lot of people have been asking like, oh, like, what are you going to do now? Are you going to stop? Are you going to, I plan on continuing to work out and eat healthy, not because of how it's making me look really, but because of how it's making me feel. And I think, you know, even Payman and I were traveling last week for work a little bit and I wasn't able to make it to a gym and I felt it, you know, so now it's something that my body craves and, you know, it's a healthy thing, to crave to a certain degree for sure. So, you know, I've been going back this week still, and it's just been amazing to have like the support of so much of my friends and family and everyone at the gym. And yeah, it's crazy to look back when I started this and yeah, feel really grateful for Payman and everyone else who sort of helped guide me and support me along the way. And yeah, it feels really good.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing accomplishment. And you know, it shows that you can break old habits, build new ones, and it just takes time and effort and consistently showing up. And I would say, for me, at least, one, the only thing I could say in terms of moving forward, of course, like now it's a part of your life, which is great. And you will be thinking about it in a way of like, you know, it's more rare that you don't work out than you do, which I think is what you want. Same thing with food, you make better choices, stuff like that. But I also think one thing that's always been hard for me is like finding the right balance and not being too kind of, you know, when you're so obsessed with it during a specific period of time, right? Like right now versus 8 months ago, like of course 8 months ago you had a lot of weight to lose and a lot better shape to get into. I think what's always been hard for me is like finding a balance where, you know, I used to have to think in this like such a strict way, and then you have to transition to like still strict, but also you don't want to be too strict on your body at a point where it's like now super low body fat, all the stuff, because then you could have unintended consequences that you don't want to have, that I've personally experienced myself. So that's the only thing I would say going forward, because it is a very hard thing to break because you built a good mold, but that mold is more so for a specific period of time versus that's not the permanent life mold, because I don't know if like your body would do well under that when it doesn't have as much fat to lose or shape to get in.
No, for sure. And I've definitely been treating myself, so that's good. But you know, I have a weird relationship with food where like I know that you can relate, like it's hard to not eat a lot, you know. There's like there's no such thing as just like one slice of cake for me, or like one scoop of ice cream, or like even last night I went to the Laker game, I had a whole box of Sour Patch Kids. It tasted amazing, and I wasn't beating myself up about it, you know. But I definitely just want to be real with myself, you know. I think I did let food sort of become like an addiction and like a vice for me in that way. And I think another thing that I've learned in this process for me too is like with the way that my behavior is, it's like it's easier to not eat at times than it is to eat a little bit, you know. So I think it's like picking the times that I'm going to eat, what meals I'm going to eat, like having those, like, you know, cheat days or cheat meals or whatever, when it's nice to go out to dinner with friends and not have to think twice or whatever it is. But I just want to be careful, because even like a couple times in this last week, I just have like, you know, I see how slippery of a slope it is for me.
Yeah, I think relationship with food is like a broader topic, and you know, what are the reasons that we eat in certain ways, and part of it has to do with the food, but part of it also has to do with ourselves, and like kind of, you know, what feelings are we not kind of addressing and like hiding?
What feelings are we eating?
Food, or yeah. And so I think it's obviously a broader topic. It becomes harder when you were strict for a long time and then you try to find a balance. The balance is very hard for me to figure out as well. And I think, you just go through different waves. I just think at times I would fall into this like, oh, you know, I ate really bad, so like, let me just like
now I have to crazy
restrict
hard, yeah,
myself the next day. Restriction, stuff like that is good, but at the end of the day, you do want to make sure that you're still getting enough food and enough nutrients for your body to be able to produce everything it needs to produce and still feel good. And I've fallen to like the wrong side of that in the past, like 7-8 years ago now. But that's just one thing that, you know, to always keep in mind. And I think stuff like blood tests and things of that sort will kind of keep you more honest, because it'll be able to show you like when you're trending in a way that you don't want to go, and you can make certain adjustments.
Can you speak to the public nature of it? Like, I've never made a post like that. I know you well enough to know that that's something that's out of character for you a little bit, but like the posting on Instagram before and after, like the reception, what that felt like, because I think part of it also that I'm impressed by that I think is interesting to consider is how a lot of this stuff is going against like our preconceived routines and notions of sense of self, you know, like not just the commitment to the exercise, but also the commitment to like talking about it on the podcast, posting it on the Instagram. Like there's an element here of like, you know, disrupting your own ego and sense of self perception. And can you just touch on that briefly? Because when you posted that, I felt like a moment in time, like maybe it didn't feel like a big moment. I don't know if it did or not. I'm curious. But for me, I was just like, I felt very proud of you in that moment. It was like, you know, I was like, I showed it to my girlfriend. I was like, yeah, look, you know, he's been on this for a minute. And like, you know, it's a cool moment. So talk about the public nature of it a little bit.
Well, thanks for saying that, Phineas. Yeah, I think the biggest thing was like challenging my own comfort level. You know, I think with this whole thing, there was a lot of like vulnerability of like, I remember showing up to my first boxing class and I was getting winded after throwing two jabs. And I was next to these guys with like 12 packs who were like destroying the bag, you know? And like, I totally felt like, you know, I felt weak and I felt like a loser in that moment. And I think this whole thing has just been like going towards the discomfort. And I feel like so much of change and progress, and when Payman talks about breaking down old habits and building new ones, is going towards the discomfort. And I think this was sort of the last piece of like, that makes me cringe and it doesn't make me feel good thinking about doing it, and that's why I have to do it. And all this narrative and rhetoric that I have in my head, just like throw it out the window. Like, who cares? It's just Instagram. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, do not take yourself so seriously. There's going to be people who think that post is super whack. There's going to be people who think the post is super dope, and there's going to be people who don't care about the post at all. And like, that's fine. I'm not doing it for anyone but myself. And I do think about, like, you know, looking back, that was a moment in time. It was a huge goal that I set for myself, and it was something that I accomplished, and I, you know, and I made a post about it to share. And I think I really did that for me. And like, however the post, whatever happened after that, like it was out of my control, and I didn't really care that much. And I think it was super refreshing for me to just sort of like let that go. And you know, it's almost like, I feel like how we used to think about and treat Instagram back in like the early days, you know, like the first couple of years, where like now, like when you look back at like Facebook, right, it's like, oh my God, I wrote that on someone's wall or whatever. Like, I cannot believe I would ever say that. And now it's like the first couple of years of Instagram too, it's like, whoa, I posted that, like, that's insane. No, but it's just like a chill diary of like whatever you're doing. It doesn't have these like stakes that we've sort of given it now with like all this power, you know. So it sort of felt nice to take a little bit of that power back, and obviously it was great to see so many people like, you know, support it, engage with it, whatever you want to say, but ultimately I was just doing it for myself. And I think the more that people can, you know, make those decisions for themselves and like not cloud their judgment or decision making with the thoughts and opinions of others that you can't control anyways, it's just so much more freeing and like just a giant exhale and like so much more validating that like no one could make me feel bad about that, because I don't give anyone else that power. It all comes from myself, and I feel really great about myself, and that's really all that matters.
Love it. Yeah, thank you for speaking to it.
Love that. Well, thank you, Mason, and congrats again. And
thanks, bud.
We'll talk soon, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.